beyond Iraq, there's Iran, another country which, if it were for Bush, he would probably bomb Iran. But there's other Americans who were saying to him, just a minute, just a minute, you know, you've made a big enough mess in Iraq. The Baker report last year, which was drawn up to find another way of solving the Iraqi mess, the conclusions they came up with was, far from bombing Iran, we should be talking to Iran and Syria and involving Syria and Iran in an international deal to stabilize Iraq. Because we have to pull out, because we can't carry on like this. It's having a terrible effect on American public opinion, on American youth, and it's also financially a burden. You see, Machiavelli pointed out, you don't go to war to destroy your enemy. You go to war to conquer your enemy and exploit him. You don't destroy the goose that lays the golden eggs. You capture the goose and make it lay eggs for you. And in Iraq, that's not the way it's working out. It's costing them so much. They're not gaining the benefits that they expected. They haven't even got the oil production they wanted because of these problems. And the Baker Report said, basically, we need to get out, but we can't leave a vacuum. Iran has influence. Syria has influence. They're two powerful nations. Use them. There's a division amongst the American ruling class on this question as well. And it's not by chance that Obama is saying that if he's the president, he would begin the withdrawal of troops. He's listening to the people who drew up the Baker Report and saying, look, this is creating more problems than, you know, on the scale, the negative is far bigger than the positive. It's a mess, basically. 5 years after they've invaded, they haven't solved anything. But he would invade Iran. But Iran, you can't do it. You cannot do another Iraq. America is being exhausted in Iraq, and it can't do it in Iran. But what's interesting about Iran is that you've got the development of student protests, workers' protests, trade union struggles. There is a class struggle developing in Iran, and there's a strong working class in Iran. And the beauty of Iran is that in the Arab world, in the last 20 years, let's say that the Islamic fundamentalists have presented themselves as somehow radical, with solutions to the problems of the poor, etc. Well, in Iran, they've been in power for nearly 30 years. And the Islamic fundamentalists of Iran have not solved the problems of the poor. Far from it. There are terrible problems of the students, of the workers, of the poor in Iran. And the movement of the youth in Iran is against this regime. And we believe that in the next period, the next few years, there's going to be a very powerful movement in Iran. The same kind of movement that toppled the Shah of Iran back in 78-79 will emerge again. And it will be against these people. That will send a message to the rest of the Arab world that the Islamic fundamentalists are not defenders of the poor Arabs. They are another form of ruling class, basically. But what we see in the whole of the Middle East, there is the mess in Iraq, there's this terrible conflict in Israel-Palestine, but we also see for the example of Egypt, where in the last year there's been a massive wave of strikes in Egypt, occupation of factories, textile factories of 10, 15,000 workers that have been occupied by the workers. When they talk about Islamic women, you know, and being under the oppression of Islamic law and all the rest of it, in these factories, it was the women who started the protest movement. It was the women with the veil who started the strikes and the occupations, and they went to the men workers and they said, we're on strike, what about you? And forced the men out as well. And they were sleeping in the factories overnight, occupying the factories with their babies. And they've actually defeated the government several times in this movement. And it keeps going. It's a year, more than a year now. But there's wave after wave of protest. And it's workers protesting on their issues. We've had protests in Morocco. And even we have the situation in the Lebanon, where, think about it, Lebanon was considered the Switzerland of the Middle East. Beirut was modern. It was the banking center of the Middle East. Very, let's say, Europeanized in the whole setup. They suffered years of civil war. The Israel played an important part in that. They occupied a part of the country for a very long time. They were eventually forced out. They managed.
They're still in Lebanon.
Yeah.
They're still today in Lebanon. They didn't withdraw all the troops.
No, but I mean, but the occupation, right, which they had, they occupied a whole chunk of Lebanon there. But Lebanon, which is, let's say, the closest in terms of living conditions probably to what we would see here, and yet look at the mess that's been created there. Years of civil war, they rebuilt the place, and then Israel went to war against Lebanon, and actually they declared, the leaders of the Israeli army actually said, we will bomb you back 20 years into the past. Basically, we'll recreate the same conditions that you were in the past. But the difference this time with Israel and Lebanon is that Israel, in the past, Israel went to war and always won its wars. And there was this image of Israel, a very powerful army, that you don't mess around with. Egypt, they smashed them. Jordan, Syria, they took a chunk out of them. They kept it, the Golan Heights, Lebanon. And the image was, whatever happens, the Israeli army can defend us. And this guy that I read to you before, he told me that one of the things that shook Israeli people over the fight against Hezbollah in Lebanon was that for the first time it seemed that Israel wasn't as safe as it used to be. The missiles that Hezbollah has, theoretically at least, the ones that could hit Tel Aviv. They were hitting Haifa already, which is a major city in the north of Israel. And the impression was given that the Israeli army is no longer capable of defending Israel. And there's chaos. There is instability inside Israel itself now. There's a whole series of questioning. It led to conflicts within the army, resignations of leaders. There's a whole series of corruption scandals, etc. But the Lebanon is an example of how imperialism works in these countries. Lebanon is a small country with many different ethnic groups, let's say, languages and religions, Christians, Shiites, Sunnis, and different political formations. There's a kind of equilibrium they try to establish between the different, you know, you have this role in the state, you have this, etc., with all these guarantees. Well, the destabilization, I mean, historically started with the Palestinian bases in the south, which were firing into Israel. That is the reason why Israel went into Lebanon originally. And that provoked civil war in the past. They've managed to stabilize it. They've now recreated terrible conditions in the Lebanon. And we've had, we've even, in Lebanon itself, we've seen general strikes and strikes led by the trade unions. But politically, a stalemate. And if you look at the way imperialism has behaved on this as well, Syria was in Lebanon for many years. They actually, the Americans called Syria in originally to help stabilize. And that must be behind the thinking they've got now for Iraq. Some of the more, maybe the long, more intelligent Americans are thinking, well, Syria actually played a stabilizing role in Lebanon. Maybe we could use it in Iraq. But Bush had the opposite idea. No, get Syria out. They got Syria out, promoted a pro-Western government, Signora, and instead of stability, they've got more of a mess. Because you could say to a certain degree, the Syrian army had a certain control over Hezbollah. Remove the Syrians, Hezbollah has become a power in a part of the country. So you can see the mess that's developing. Now, what is the common thread, and where is the solution to this mess? Because if you look at it without understanding the deep roots of the problem, you'd have to say, what a terrible mess. These Arabs, they can't sort themselves out. And it justifies the Americans going in and trying to give them some kind of democracy, etc. If we understand that the real causes of this conflict arise from imperialism, they want to control the region. They need to control the region fundamentally for the sources of energy which are in the area. They can't afford any of these countries to slip into the hands, let's say, of political forces or powers that would not toe the line of imperialism. That's why they came into conflict with Saddam at a certain point, because he was trying to play his own game at a certain point. He tried to take Kuwait and this kind of stuff. They want regimes which do the bidding of imperialism, and they want to impose these regimes all across the Middle East. But if we look at the situation in Egypt, the terrible social problems that are provoking these strikes, that are provoking the protests of workers in Iran, the general strikes that we've seen in Lebanon, but even in Israel, that in Israel you have last year a massive protest of the students against the increase in fees, because the government was imposing heavy university fees and school fees, and there was a protest of the students against. There's been a policy of cutting back on pensions. The economic policy of the Egyptian government, of the Lebanese government, of the Israeli government is the same. Cut back on pensions, privatization, attack the living conditions of workers, privatize education. And so you have this situation where you'll have Iranian students protesting about lack of rights and bad conditions in the universities, and Israeli students protesting against their government because of the privatizations and the cuts and the etc. Israeli pensioners who can't get to the end of the month because their pension's being cut, and the same with Egyptians. What we say is this: there is a common class interest which we as socialists have to base ourselves on and say, we have to highlight what unites the workers of all these countries, and they're all fighting their own governments. And if you think about it, their governments also have a common interest. When the dockers in Israel went on strike a couple of years back, the Israeli government, you know how it got round the dockers' strike? Because the goods weren't coming into Israel. They used the ports in Lebanon, in Jordan, and in Egypt. Now, if it's true that the Arab countries are all brothers united against the terrible Israeli despot, why did they collaborate with the Israeli government in getting round the dockers' strike, who would be Jewish and Arab Israeli workers on strike against their government? It shows you that when it comes down to it, the ruling class of Israel has an economic interest, which is a common interest with the Arab governments. And in fact, think about it. Saudi Arabia is an ally of US imperialism. So is Israel. And yet the Arab regime in Saudi Arabia makes a lot of noise about the poor Palestinians. They do nothing for them. They might give them a bit of money to organize the PLO. They don't move. They don't do anything for them. They use the Palestinian question to divert attention away. We've got comrades in Morocco who tell us that even in Morocco, which is miles away from Israel, the government and the right wing, they will, when there's any problem, it's all the fault of Israel. You know, unemployment in Morocco, social problems in Morocco, Israel. It shows you how they use it in a reactionary way to hold back the workers and to divert attention from the real issues. What's the solution to this problem? Well, we believe that the workers of Egypt, the workers of Iran, the workers of the Lebanon and Israel are being forced by economic situation into struggle, into a movement against their own governments. And in this struggle, things will become clearer. And because, you see, there could be a homeland for the Palestinians and the Jews in historical Palestine, that both people could live there. If there wasn't the Zionist ruling class, which has a material interest in maintaining the status quo, if you remove the Zionist ruling class and you remove the ruling class of Egypt and the sheikhs of Saudi Arabia and the mullahs of Iran, all privileged elites at the top, and you use the wealth of these countries, and these countries are very rich. Think about it. They produce the oil of the world. They have huge wealth. What do these countries do with the wealth? They put it in Swiss banks, in the London Stock Exchange, in London banks, in New York. They keep their money safe where nobody can get it, and they don't use it to create jobs, decent conditions, clean water, health service, etc., for the Arab people. The resources are there. If the resources of all the Arab world, can you imagine, the whole of North Africa, Iraq, Kuwait, the Gulf states, who are they're, you see the wealth that oozes out of these people, it's disgusting to look at it. If this was used to create the social services and the infrastructure and to improve the living standards of all people, there would be no reason for the national conflicts. And The national conflict, at the end of the day, I mean, Lenin pointed it out. He said, the national question, at the end of the day, is a question of bread. If I haven't got bread, you have. I'm Irish, you're English. Somebody will come along and will say, the problem is the Irish, or it's the English. And I say, no, no, it isn't. No, it isn't. It's the Irish capitalist, the English capitalist, the Iraqi capitalist, the American capitalist, who has an interest, because they're all privileged in maintaining this situation, and we, the workers of all countries, have the same interests, and therefore, we should unite in a struggle to change society in a socialist direction. And by socialism, what you mean is control over the means of production, the major companies, under in the hands of the working people who actually produce the wealth. They should be able to decide what is done with the wealth that they produce. Should it be used to bomb Iraq every day? Or should it be used to build hospitals, schools, decent housing, supply of clean water? You'd solve the problem if you do that. But capitalism can't do it, because capitalism is based on the appropriation of the wealth by a small minority. And they spend their money making sure that this system survives. Part of that is spending the billions bombing the Iraqis. We say that's not the way. We have to give an alternative message. Now, I could say a lot more about the Middle East and each individual country, but I've said enough, and I've said it hoping that it will provoke discussion, questions, debate.